This is Day to Day. I'm Alex Chadwick. Our colleague Noah Adams has brought a new book about the Scots-Irish to our attention. And Noah, it is Scots, not Scotch.
Right. Scots is proper for the people. Scotch is a whiskey. And as you know, they spelled that W-I-S-K-E-Y. The Scots-Irish came from Scotland near the border with England, migrated to Ulster Province in the north of Ireland, then to America. I'm telling this whole story very quickly. This is not the Irish famine migration.
Yeah.
That was later. These are people, mostly Protestants, who settled out in the Appalachian Mountains. They call that the backcountry.
And they're still there.
27 million Americans in all are of Scots-Irish descent. And many still have certain character traits. In this book, which is called Born Fighting, the author, James Webb, titles one chapter with four words: fight, sing, dance, pray. And as he told me laughing, nothing's changed there.
James Webb, he wrote a novel about Vietnam, Fields of Fire, a terrific novel. He later became Secretary of the Navy.
He's written several books. He was a Marine officer, wounded severely in 1969. He then went to law school, started writing. He is Scots-Irish, and the subtitle of this book is How the Scots-Irish Shaped America. And I asked him to describe one particular turning point battle in the Revolutionary War. This is the Battle of King's Mountain in 1780 in North Carolina, the Mountaineers against the British. The British were led by a young major, Patrick Ferguson.
The whole battlefield for King's Mountain probably is as long as five or six football fields. It's not a particularly memorable piece of terrain. But what you had was the Scots-Irish and others who had joined them in these settlements, including three of my direct ancestors, by the way. Very, very proud of them, looking back into history. Tracked the British, tracked them for days. Ferguson was a very fine soldier. But what he was doing was fighting under the tactics that were more effective in continental warfare, centralized command. He commanded using whistles and formal bayonet charges, and the Americans on the other side, the Mountaineers, essentially were totally decentralized. Their four or five commanders that they had elected as commanders basically told them that when this battle starts, you fight as individuals.
So they could fire at will.
They not only fired at will, they didn't have to form into specific battle formations. Each man made his own decision with regard to terrain and when he would shoot and where he would move. All they knew is they were moving forward up the mountain, and they were comfortable in the woods. They were comfortable with their weapons, and they just totally destroyed the Redcoat force.
You've been there and walked this battleground.
Yes, I have.
Can you get a sense of your people actually being there and fighting?
It's one of my long-time interests in my life, going to different military battlefields. I've done a great many of the Civil War battlefields where some of my ancestors fought. I've done World War II. Of course, I did a live battlefield in Vietnam when I was a younger man. I recently was in Afghanistan. One of the great passions in my life is to do exactly that, to go into a battlefield and see if you can get a feeling for how a battle took place. This was a very simple battlefield, King's Mountain, and it's not hard to imagine what happened. And for me, the power of King's Mountain was the idea that these pioneers out in the mountains took it upon themselves when they were threatened to essentially destroy this British force that was threatening them. And then they went home. They had Indians to defend themselves against. The Indian Wars were quite dangerous for the pioneer families. So for me, it's the whole setting. It's what happened before and what happened afterwards and what this meant to the strong sense of independence that had been developed in these people.
Then you have the Civil War, then you have the World Wars, then you have Korea and Vietnam. The men who fought at King's Mountain were remembering, am I right, the Battle of the Boyne before in Ulster?
Yes.
And then the Battle of New Orleans and Yorktown and Valley Forge and the Indian Wars. Is there a dilution over the years and through the wars of that memory of what their ancestors did?
I think emphatically not in this culture. This culture has a 2,000-year military tradition. It also has a 2,000-year tradition of wanderlust and adventure. But the military traditions and the respect for people who serve is one of the key focal points of the culture. And a lot of it is father and son. A lot of it is extended family. But in my experience and the experience of the people that I've been around, it is one of the true continuums in the Scots-Irish culture. And if you look at the United States military in any war that we have fought, including today, you will see that the combat units are filled with people who are carrying on this tradition. And parenthetically, this is one frustration I have always had when people talk about the volunteer military in a sense that, well, these people volunteered, they know what they're getting into, they want to go to war or whatever. So many of the people who volunteer for the better combat units in the American military do it out of a conscious sense of tradition rather than seeking out any particular war.
James Webb is the author of Born Fighting, How the Scots-Irish Shaped America. Thank you, Mr. Webb.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to Noah Adams for that interview.